Good morning. Please be seated. Welcome, Council. The first case on our docket this morning is number 62840, Catholic Diocese of Green Bay v. Stowe 119. Council, ready to proceed?
I am. Good morning, Chief Justice Hardesty. May it please the Court, Peter Mazzio for Appellant, Roman Catholic Diocese of Green Bay. There are three issues before the Court in this case. With regard to the statute of limitations, the plaintiff at no time commenced his claim against the Diocese of Green Bay in a timely fashion. And even affording him the longest statutory time period of 11.215 with a 10-year discovery period, he still did not commence a timely action. With regard to the personal jurisdiction, at no time did the Diocese of Green Bay ever consummate any activities in the state of Nevada so as to give rise to general jurisdiction, nor did they purposely direct any activities to the state of Nevada so as to give rise to specific jurisdiction. And with respect to John Feeney, he was never deemed an agent on behalf of the Diocese of Green Bay for any purposes, for employment purposes, or arising out of the rite, the ritual of incarnation. And finally, with regard to the negligence cause of action, at no time did the Diocese of Green Bay give or have a duty of care to the plaintiff at the time that John Feeney touched him in the fall of 1984 and the spring of 1985.
Mr. Mazzio, I have one question you touched on about the employment. Did Reverend Feeney ever receive his compensation from the Diocese of Green Bay while he was working in Nevada, or did the Nevada diocese pay him for the time he was within the state of Nevada?
And at all times, with respect to his employment while he was in the Diocese of Reno, Las Vegas, he was paid by the Diocese of Reno, Las Vegas. The only thing that the Diocese of Green Bay, there were communications between John Feeney and the Diocese of Green Bay with respect to the Leo Benevolence Association, the pension,
right.
And so they maintained that. But at no time, when you talk about agency or control, at no time did the Diocese of Green Bay control or supervise his activities. When we speak of an agency relationship, we're talking about the contractual power to control the duties of another for the specific benefit and purpose of the employer. At the time of this incident, the Diocese of Green Bay was the only one that supervised and oversaw John Feeney's activities in the state of Nevada, and he was serving the business purpose, so to speak, of the parishioners in the state of Nevada. At no time was John Feeney serving any parishioners or congregants or any individuals or any association in the state of Wisconsin. With respect to, if I may proceed, with respect to the statute of limitations, the 11.215, the accrual of the cause of action, we contend in this case, the accrual of that cause of action commences from the first identifiable injury. We know that the plaintiff in this case at all times could recall the abuser. He could recall the incident, and he could appreciate the wrongfulness of the conduct. So then the question is, when does, if the 11.215 statute, discovery period statute, applies, then when does the accrual period start? It starts and it commences from the first identifiable injury. Now, we know from the facts as alleged by the plaintiff in this case, he identified drug abuse and alcohol abuse in high school, so clearly before he was 18 years old. But if we give him the benefit of the doubt with regard to the injury, let's look at the most egregious injury. The most egregious injury in this case is the attempted suicide in 1991, and that placed the plaintiff on that point on inquiry notice. So the inquiry notice requires the reasonable, prudent person to discover or reasonably should have discovered the injury was connected to the sex abuse from 1984, and he did not do that. And that would be the commencement of the 10-year period. We submit that the 10-year period doesn't even apply because when he had that first identifiable injury in high school or the attempt at suicide, then the accrual period, the statute in effect would have been the 11.215 with a 3-year period. And then if we go further than that, the 11.215 refers to sex abuse. It doesn't refer to, it's not a negligence claim, it's sex abuse, so it's an intentional tort. And so there was no intentional tort alleged against the Diocese of Green Bay. There was only an intentional tort, a battery claim alleged against John Feeney. But against my client, the Diocese of Green Bay, it was only a negligence referral, vicarious liability. And we know that the vicarious liability was dismissed prior to trial. But so all they had was a negligence. We're talking about the 11.190 negligence two-year statute of limitations. He did not bring the claim. He had an obligation to bring the claim within 2 years. So, but giving him the benefit of the 10-year discovery period, he did not commence that action within 10 years from when he attempted suicide from any identifiable injury.
Counsel, if it were the Diocese of Las Vegas, would there be any problem with the jurisdictional question?
With regard to the jurisdictional question of agency or incarnation?
Any of them.
Of any of them. Absolutely. At no time did the Diocese of Green Bay submit or purposely direct any activities to the state of Nevada so as to give rise to the benefit of privileges and protections afforded by the state.
So once a priest has problems and the diocese from which he begins his career, the incantation in
Cardination.
Once he begins to travel throughout the country, his original diocese, under your theory, would never have any responsibility for his conduct.
If he was, as Cardinal Mata had testified, if he was a Vegas, if he was free-floating, but at the time of the incident, he was granted faculties by Diocese of Reno, Las Vegas in July of 1984. So this concept of incarnation is a right. It's a vow of obedience. And while it may give them the right to laicize this priest and take away his priestly faculties, at no time we have to look at jurisdiction in terms of agency and the power, inherent power or the implied power to control John Feeney.
Did the Diocese of Green Bay have the ability to restrict his ministry or in any way recall him back to Green Bay?
Not at the time that he's actually granted faculties. They have to work with the Diocese of Reno, Las Vegas. They can't just say in the middle of a tenure or if he's working in Nevada, they can't just say, you have to come back to us. And I would liken it to this concept of incarnation and the ability to laicize the priest for misconduct that they learn about at some point.
This seems to be an issue that the court focused on down below, and so I was just trying to understand how that process works.
And respectfully, I submit that the district court erred in determining that there was an agency relationship. Agency relationship implies a control and supervision over the individual for the business purpose of the employer. We don't have that here. Incarnation is likened to a state licensing agency, let's say for doctors and lawyers, where they license an attorney or doctor after educational and testing requirements. They can investigate claims of misconduct. And then they can also revoke and suspend the license of a doctor or lawyer. But if you make the Diocese of Green Bay responsible in this case simply because they have the ability of this concept of incarnation, which arises from canon law, not from civil law, because they have the ability to laicize and prevent a priest from working and take away his priestly faculties, then you're essentially putting all the state licensing agencies, the Nevada State Bar, the Medical Board, and any other boards that license a professional in the state responsible for the malpractice that's committed by a lawyer, a doctor, an accountant, or what have you.
Well, isn't there an important difference, though, because, as I understand it, a priest could not be a priest in Nevada if he weren't incarnated, putting that into a verb, yet Nevada doesn't confer incarnation on him because Green Bay already has done so. So if a doctor moves from Wisconsin to Nevada, the doctor has to get licensed in Nevada to practice in Nevada. But that's not so in the religious setting. So to some extent, the analogy is imperfect. Wouldn't you agree?
It's imperfect, but if we look at the ability to revoke his powers, the Diocese of Green Bay cannot just recall him. Once he's granted faculties, which he was by the Diocese of Las Vegas, he is effectively employed by the Diocese.
So let's say that he came to Nevada, had his faculties here in Nevada, and an issue arose in Green Bay. It came to their attention that was so serious they felt his incarnation should be revoked. How would that work?
Then the Diocese of Las Vegas would communicate that to the Diocese of
Green Bay. No, it came to Green Bay's attention. It was a historical act by a priest that, say, he was convicted of pedophilia, of lewdness with a minor, and it came out in Wisconsin. So Wisconsin wanted to revoke his incarnation, even though he was in Nevada. Could it have done that?
They effectively would be able to do that. We don't have that in this case.
Right. No, I know we don't. I'm just trying to narrow the thinking on this.
They would not just be able to revoke it. They would have to, the Diocese of Green Bay would then have to communicate to the Diocese of Reno, Las Vegas, and express their concerns and discuss with them revoking his faculties first. Only after that can John Feeney then be investigated and, I guess, laicized, right, so to speak, in the Wisconsin.
And I do understand your point that at the time he came to Nevada, he had not been convicted of anything, so it was different from the California case. I take that point as well.
Not only wasn't he convicted, there were never any credible allegations, yes, against him. And even the Diocese of Green Bay had referred a case out to the civil authorities. They didn't find any credible allegations of abuse at that time. Not until years later, until 2000 or the 2000s, was he convicted of a prior incident. But the Green Bay did what they should have. They referred him out to civil authorities, and they found no credible abuse at that time. Justices, I apologize.
I got a question for you real quick.
I don't have a clock on this.
You have 4:40, but I'm sure that the chief will make accommodation for you.
Thank you.
My question is, do we have to look in, as far as jurisdiction is concerned, is what Green Bay knew and when they knew it? The old Watergate question. What did they know and when did they know it as far as an obligation or as a, let me use the word duty?
So essentially what you're asking, Justice Cherry, if I'm correct, placing a product into the stream of commerce or foreseeability, is that sufficient? And that's been rejected by the U.S. Supreme Court in Asahi, Nicastro, and Goodyear. Placing a product in the stream of commerce, as Justice O'Connor said in Asahi, without more is not a purposeful conduct, purposely availed, directed to the foreign state so as to enjoy the protections.
I know that the education people, they have this thing called pass the trash, where somebody is suspected or even admitted that they do some type of some type of predator, and then they move to another state. And if we go ahead and say there's a jurisdiction in this case, there'd be jurisdiction in that case also, I assume.
It doesn't come down to knowledge, foreseeability. So whether it's foreseeable, and this is similar to the Barber versus Lyles case that this court ruled upon in December of 2013. Where the unilateral acts of the daughter taking the car from California, registered to her mom, out of the state and into Nevada, it wasn't directed. It wasn't activity directed by the mom. So if what you're asking is, did the Diocese of Green Bay seek placement for him in the state of Nevada? They did not. He sought placement by himself. They revoked his faculties in Green Bay.
Whether it be a rabbi, a priest, a school teacher, don't we run into some employment law protection of the employee, and I'm calling the priest an employee, or a rabbi an employee, or a school teacher an employee? Aren't there certain laws where they couldn't even disclose certain things unless there was a conviction?
That may be, in fact, the case. However, with respect to jurisdiction, that doesn't subject the Diocese of Green Bay to the jurisdiction, because we know that John Feeney was not supervised or controlled. He was not employed by the Diocese of Green Bay at the time. He was working in the Diocese of Reno, Las Vegas, when he had touched the boy in 1984. So that doesn't subject the Diocese of Green Bay to jurisdiction. It does not. That's more of an issue of consideration for the negligence claim, but not for the statute of limitations or for personal jurisdiction. Had John Feeney, for instance, been employed still, granted faculties, and then as a priest of the Diocese of Green Bay, sent to Nevada to do work there, temporary work, he's doing it on behalf of the Diocese of Green Bay. We don't have that. They revoked his faculties. They said, you're gone. You can seek placement elsewhere. So we don't have, once as of January 1st of 1984, we do not have John Feeney, who is being directed to the state of Nevada. We know that because he went to Arizona first, and then he was actually granted faculties in San Diego for 2 weeks. They revoked his faculties. So each diocese can confer, grant, and then revoke the faculties of a priest working within the diocese. He left, and by his own, of his own volition, he went from San Diego into Nevada. At no time did the Diocese of Green Bay seek placement for him. This is similar to the case of Doe versus the Diocese of Boise, where Father Garcia was previously accused of allegations of sexual misconduct there. He was released, and he was entitled to seek placement elsewhere. The New Mexico Court of Appeals said that at no time did the Diocese of Boise seek placement for him, nor did they control his duties and activities while working in the state of for the Archdiocese of Santa Fe. And therefore, they did not submit to the jurisdiction of the court. And I'd ask this court to look at that, the facts of that case, and take a similar approach in this case. The danger in this case is that if we allow the plaintiff in this case to, if we look at jurisdiction based on this concept of incardination, it arises from canon law, not civil law. It's not even a word found in civil law. But if we allow that to happen, then we're placing every licensing agency in this state on notice that you're going to be susceptible and liable for suit from the malpractice that's committed of a licensed professional, merely because they oversee the licensing requirements of doctors and lawyers, and let's say they fail to revoke or suspend a lawyer's license, who then again commits malpractice. That is not what's... Oh,
did you want to offer a rebuttal as part of your argument? Okay. Ms. Clark reset the clock is for 3 minutes, and we'll interrupt you at this time.
Thank you, Justice.
And ask Mr. Finnegan to proceed.
Morning, Chief Justice and Justices. My name is Mike Finnegan. I'm here on behalf of Dole 119. There are two overarching issues that we have here. The first is the trial court's right to handle a complex case and the trial court's discretion. Second is the jury and the trial court's, as a trier of facts, their discretion in their viewing all this evidence and the deference that we give to them in this appeal. I'd like to talk about the statute of limitations first.
Well, there's a threshold question. If the court didn't have jurisdiction, the deference that you're arguing about wouldn't even apply. Maybe we should be talking about why there's jurisdiction over this diocese in Green Bay, huh?
The trial court, listened for 3 weeks to all the evidence here, hundreds of hours of testimony.
So in a few minutes, could you summarize what are the facts that provide specific jurisdiction for Nevada to exercise jurisdiction over this diocese, please?
Again, and these are Judge Vega's findings, factual findings, which do have some deference. First one was that Father Feeney was employed by the Diocese of Green Bay when he was here in Nevada, number one. Number two, he was incarnated.
How is that finding supported by the record?
The finding is supported by the record. She found that John Feeney promised obedience to the Diocese of Green Bay, that he could have been recalled by the Diocese of Green Bay at any time. And Justice, you asked that question. It's also supported at RA. It's our appendix 204 to 05. And there are numerous people that testified that the Diocese of Green Bay at any time could have recalled John Feeney to the Diocese of Green Bay when he was out here.
And I know you want to answer Justice Hardesty's question, but while you're on this first point, the proposition you're advancing then is in essence that once a diocese goes through the incarnation process with a priest, and that priest turns out to be a bad seed or a bad apple, and he leaves that diocese forever, the incarnating diocese is responsible for whatever he does, wherever he goes. Is that right? Is that
That's absolutely true.
That's your position legally?
That's okay. What the testimony is too. No matter where a priest goes, when he is outside of his diocese of incarnation, his home bishops, the Bishop of Green Bay, can always recall him, can always restrict him, can always do whatever he wants as far as where his assignment is. If they want to get rid of him, which is what I think your question went to, they have to ask the Holy See, the Pope, to take that incarnation away, which they could have done here, and they never did that. The other point that I wanted to, if I can go back to your question, was that she also found, Judge Vega did, that the Diocese of Green Bay, when John Feeney was here in Nevada, that they were monitoring him. And that's supported in the record at volume 10-23-43. And that was Monsignor Kazarek. Said the purpose was for him to find out where Feeney was at all times. And so each letter that goes, each time that he's moved in Nevada, letter goes directly to his bishop in Green Bay. So the Bishop of Green Bay knows where he's at, who he's around, and what he's doing. The other purpose...
So that's a contact, though, coming from Nevada to Green Bay?
The letter is letting them know, but the supervision, the monitoring is from Green Bay coming here. So they're finding out, and he's making sure that he knows where Feeney is, and he also has to know what he's doing. Again, that's volume 10, 2343, is where Monsignor Kozarek testified to that.
And what facts were introduced in the record that supported a basis for Green Bay to recall this priest before 1984?
What facts? There are numerous people that testified that he had, the Bishop of Green Bay, had the power to recall him to Green Bay at any time on a phone call.
Power, I'm talking about what facts exist in the record that would have alerted the Bishop of Green Bay to recall this priest before 1984.
He should have never came here at all. And once he was here, they had 10 to 12 different reports of abuse, suspicions of abuse before he got here. He should have never gotten to this community, never gotten to this state, and had access to these kids. And without the permission of his bishop in the Diocese of Green Bay, he could never do that. He can't leave his Diocese of Green Bay without his bishop's permission.
But counsel has argued that there were no findings of convictions, no corroborated incidents prior to 1984. Do you agree with that?
Completely disagree. 100% disagree with that. Okay. The jury and Judge Vega had a number of different reports starting at 67, 66. A family that reported 67, 1970. The bishop had the letter when I'm swimming in the nude with kids, 1974. A letter sent from Illinois to the bishop saying that their son had been molested. 1974, the two girls on the retreat that the reports and testimony from of a sexual nature. And the point, I think you had asked it, Justice, about the conviction, and you just brought it up as well. If you look at AA, Volume 3, 554, what they have here is there is a family, the Merrifields, who reported the abuse of their two sons to the district attorney in Wisconsin. And that district attorney met with the bishop of the Diocese of Green Bay in 1978 before he got out here. And in that document, the bishop notes that the district attorney told him that there are a number of like crimes of a sexual nature that Feeney could be prosecuted for. And what happened there, what the documents show, is that family was convinced not to move forward with that prosecution, but there absolutely was evidence that he could have been convicted.
May I ask a follow-up question here?
Yes.
In terms of specific, well, first of all, do you concede that there was not general jurisdiction here?
I do not.
Okay. Secondly, talking about specific jurisdiction, prior to the incidents in 1994, with this Doe in 1984, what did Green Bay send to or communicate to Nevada affirmatively, other than the fact that this incarnated priest ended up here? Was there anything on or before the date of the second sexual incident whereby Green Bay was reaching out to Nevada other than through the presence of the flawed priest?
Yes, two things. There is the letter of good standing, which is from was written from the Bishop of Green Bay, and it was addressed to the Bishop of San Diego, but that letter stated that it gave permission for Feeney to work in San Diego or any of the other southern dioceses, which would include Reno, Las Vegas.
But that was addressed to San Diego?
It was, but they had it here in Reno, Las Vegas.
So San Diego gave it to Reno?
Bishop McFarland couldn't remember if he got it from Feeney, so he didn't know if Feeney was carrying it or if one of the church officials had sent it to him. But he testified that he had it.
Would this apply uniquely to clergy? Because I'm worried about unintended consequences of school teachers. Would a school teacher that had some allegations against him or her in another state then be sent here and actually molest people, would that school district then would this court have jurisdiction over that school district?
Not necessarily. So normally in an employment situation, in a teaching situation like that, that teacher would have no longer have any connection to that school district in a different state.
So it is unique as to clergy?
It's unique to this record and these facts here, yes.
Okay. You had a second point, and you didn't make it. It was on the Green Bay reaching out to Nevada.
Yes, the second one was the telephone conversation. And so they affirmatively, Monsignor Kazarik affirmatively recommended Feeney when Bishop McFarland called him.
Bishop McFarland initiated that contact?
He did, yes.
And where in the record is the description of that contact?
Let me do it.
And if it's going to take you a long time, you could do a supplemental authority with that.
It will not take me a long time.
I don't want to derail you.
That's in volume, the first on the letter is volume 1, 218. Second one, and then the telephone conversation is volume 1, 222 to 223 is Bishop McFarland's testimony, and also volume 1, 208 to 211. And then there's the memo that the Vicar General Kazarik wrote, and that's volume 3, 279.
Mm-hmm.
Counsel, can I ask you on the statute of limitations issue? Here it appears it might have been a mixed issue of law and fact as to the accrual of the statute of limitations and all. Wouldn't it have been proper for the judge in this situation to let the jury make the determination if the statute of limitations had expired, or do you think it's purely an issue of law that the court could rule on?
Hmm. In this particular, normally I'd say that it's normally something that goes to jury. In this particular case, the diocese in their trial memorandum, in their brief here, and today at oral argument, they haven't pointed to any facts that Doe 119 knew that the sexual abuse was the cause of his injuries. None. They've said that he experienced the injuries, but there's nothing here in this record that says at any point that he knew of the cause of his injuries. Those two things were connected until 2008. And so it was appropriate for the trial court to make that decision as a matter of law.
Assuming you pass the jurisdictional question, how does the First Amendment figure into this particular case when we're talking about hiring retention of ministers and clergy?
It shouldn't, Your Honor.
Why?
And so it shouldn't because this isn't an internal, where you get into problems with the First Amendment is if there's an internal church dispute. And so a dispute, one of the recent Supreme Court cases, the Tabor case, dealt with somebody that was suing. So if John Feeney was suing his diocese, saying that they did something wrong in getting rid of him. Once you get outside of that, so if you have third-party harm outside of the internal church disputes, what the Supreme Court said in Employment Division versus Smith is that can be regulated, that conduct can be regulated, and we can look at that conduct. And that's all that happened here. And the diocese and their brief makes a big points about incarnation. There was nobody in any of this that had any dispute about what incarnation meant. They even asked their own expert about incarnation in this. So there's no First Amendment issue at all.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you about the statute of limitations. You said there's no direct evidence that demonstrates that this plaintiff knew enough to link his psychological problems to the abuse that occurred. But what kind of evidence would ever establish that directly? I mean, it's going to be inferential in most instances unless the plaintiff admits the connection or you have a psych report that says, you know, this is what that is.
There's usually, I'd say there are at least three different types of evidence that could be there that would possibly make this a jury question, none of which are here in this
case.
But
isn't there enough to infer that he didn't have repressed memory? He knew what happened and he always remembered what happened. And he had some pretty serious emotional problems with the suicide attempt and alcoholism and so on. Whether he made the connection or not, was it reasonable for a person not to have made the connection? Isn't that a question for the jury?
No, not on this record.
Okay.
With this record, everything about the reasonable child sex abuse victim, there's no expert testimony from the diocese saying that a reasonable child sex abuse okay. victim should connect those two things earlier. There's no studies that they had, whereas on our side, there was. We had, in our briefs, there were a bunch of different studies that we had that actually the injuries that people experience, like Donate 119, are delayed onset. And so it's like as if you're a kid and you got into a car accident, and then 10 years later, you break your arm. And you think that that broken arm 10 years later is related to everything else that's going on in your life at that point. And it's very, very hard, if not impossible, to link it back to when you're a kid. And that's what the evidence is here. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Is my time up?
You got 15 seconds. I assume, you'd like us to affirm, so we'll take it at that.
Thank you.
Mr. Mazzio?
Thank you, Justice. There are several points I'd like to address. I'll start with the letter of good standing and the telephone call. The letter of good standing would be equated to an affidavit of good standing for an attorney with a state bar, which just merely means that the attorney is duly licensed to practice, has paid up the fees, is licensed, and is not currently suspended or disbarred. That's all it's saying. It's not testing to the character of John Feeney or the attorney. The phone call was originated from the state by Bishop McFarland to Bishop Mida, who was away on retreat. It was transferred over to Monsignor Kozarek. It was an informal call, but it was never originated. It has to be purposeful conduct from the non-resident defendant, from the out-of-state defendant, into the state of Nevada. That did not occur. Furthermore, with regard to the letter of good standing, Bishop McFarland testified on his deposition that he did not see that letter until April of 2008. So not only was this letter of good standing never directed to the Nevada, it was directed to the Diocese of San Diego, but he never saw that until April of 2008, according to his testimony. It's not relevant. With regard to the teacher and this issue of the analogous, whether it's analogous to this type of situation, we cited the case of Dell versus McLean County School District, where John White was accused of sexual abuse in McLean County. He then got placement over in Urbana County School District, and he sexually abused kids. They brought a Title IX educational claim and a tort claim against McLean County. The court said no. They didn't have any control over him. They didn't seek placement for him there. They don't have any duty to control the actions of a third party, the dangerous conduct of a third party. With regard to the statute of limitations, I contend that there is no... Typically, yes, this would be an issue of fact for the jury to decide, but in this case, there was no issue of material fact because at all times, had the lower court judge applied with the facts, the first identifiable injury, and I'm not even going with the drug and alcohol abuse, which is arguably connected to this person's alcoholism and his family, whose dad and grandfather died from alcoholism. His brother lost the liver from it, and his siblings were involved in drug abuse. So let's go with the first identifiable injury, the most egregious harm, and that would be the attempted suicide. In this case, there was no issue of material fact as to how long from that point where the 3 or 10 year statute accrued. He went way past that, so he does not get the benefit of that. And finally, furthermore, the negligence claim applies to the 2 year statute. Negligence claim applies to the guys.
Counsel, are there any medical records or psychological records? Mental health records related to the 1991 suicide that themselves connect this to the abuse in 1984?
And Chief Justice Hardesty, it's not a subjective standard. So he has due diligence. He has to put it upon himself. He did go to the hospital. He was 2 attempted suicides, 91 and 92. He went to Mountain View Hospital. He went to Summerlin. He was asked in a questionnaire, were you ever previously sexually abused? He had an obligation then. He knew. He was the one to speak with counselors while I was at the hospital to make that connection. He has to know that the dots are there. But he has an obligation to connect the dots either from getting help or when he's asked, have you previously been sexually abused? And he denied being sexually abused previously. So if the burden is on him to connect it, and he didn't. And he knew prior to the 2008 news report that who John Feeney was and what he had done to him, because He didn't see the report. It was his wife who called him and said, hey, darling, by the way, there's a news report with John Feeney on it. He just got a settlement. There's a settlement concerning the Los Angeles diocese. And so all of a sudden, and so she knew, he knew about it. They'd spoken about it prior to 2008. It was never an issue of repressed memory. So this was always something that, this was not an issue that should have been presented to the jury.
Okay, thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Good question.
All right, Justice Hayden.
It goes back to what I asked you earlier, and I think this is a simple yes or no answer. Will a diocese ever be responsible for the conduct of a priest under your theory?
The Diocese of Reno, Las Vegas, yes. As long as he's granted faculties and is working there, that diocese will be responsible. And that harm was, and he did aggravate that loss, that claim against the Diocese of Reno, Las Vegas, for the alleged injury that he suffered in 1984. But it should never have been aggrieved against my client in Nevada. If he wanted to bring a claim, it should have been brought against Diocese of Green Bay in Wisconsin, not in this jurisdiction.
Any other questions for counsel? All right.
Thank you, Justice.
Thank you, counsel, for your excellent briefs and arguments in this case. It will stand submitted. We appreciate your input.